All right. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to The Exchange. This is Cheryl Castile. We are at that time of year again where we have Festivals Acadiens et Creole is coming up this weekend in Girard Park. And we're going to talk a bit about the festival today, and we're going to actually talk about one of my favorite parts of festival, which we are going to look at the Louisiana Craft Fair that takes place there. And I've got three incredible artists on the show, and I always tell people, go with your Christmas shopping list, because it is a great place to get such unique, incredible gifts. But my guests today are artists Miles Peterson and Pat Juno and Suzanne Juno. So welcome, the three of you. It's great to have you here today.
Thank you.
I know a lot of times people don't always split Pat and Suzanne up into two, Pat Juno and Suzanne Juno. I know I always say Pat Suzanne, but I thought I'd give you guys each your own individual individual name today. I'm going to start out first by talking, because you all are members of the Louisiana Crafts Guild, which I think is probably, and I'm going to let you talk about that, Miles, but it's Louisiana Crafts Guild that has partnered with the festival over the years, and is responsible for setting up the artists. Is that done through the Crafts Guild?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. We are the president of the Louisiana Crafts Guild right now. That's a big undertaking, so
yes,
thank you for doing that.
More of a job than I ever realized.
Yes, it is, isn't it?
Yes. And, yes, we set up the artists for the festival as a partnership. And we get to take care of all of that.
Yeah.
This year I think we have 70, maybe 75 artists going to attend.
Wonderful.
And it's been quite an ordeal to get it all together.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I think sometimes people don't think about. You know, you've got, okay, who's going to have what size tent? Who's going where? What time are they coming in? It's all of those things.
Oh, the logistics of it all are a story all unto themselves. Not only do you have to deal with that, you have to deal with getting enough people that the Crafts Guild accepts the standards of their work, because it is a juried show.
That's right.
We don't just invite everybody. And so that makes it a little more difficult. It takes 6 months to get everything set up and ready to go.
Now for Festival Acadiens, that's a separate jury process that the artists have to go through for festival?
If they are a Louisiana Crafts Guild member, we don't require them to jury in.
Yeah, because they've already been juried in for that.
Yes, but anyone else that's not a member, we require them to jury in.
Okay.
We have partnered with a couple of the arts councils throughout the state, and we will send them a notice, and their members don't have to jury in. We accept the fact that Baton Rouge and New Orleans arts councils have good quality standards, and so that has helped us increase the number of people we can get to come to the show.
Yeah. Now, Miles, were you involved? Because I'm just getting to know you. Were you involved with the festival years ago when the art portion of it used to be in the Science and Natural History Museum?
No, that was before
That was before your time.
Was before I was out doing
it. He was too young.
Now, Pat and Suzanne, you were involved.
Yes, we were.
Yes, we were involved.
I mean, because I'm just saying, you know, what the two of you have seen kind of evolve and change through the years with festival and the art participation in that. I mean, just in terms of location is one thing.
Oh, definitely. We had two sections of the festival that was sponsored by the then Natural History Museum.
Yeah.
It's called the Science Museum now.
Sure.
And we had a contemporary session and a traditional section. And I was in charge of the contemporary section, so I was doing, you know, getting all the artists in, but we were inside the Hyman Center, so that was really nice, along with music, which it was fun.
Yeah.
But this is much better. Outside is always better, wherever you are. It's good to see the sun, good to see everybody, all your old friends, everybody you haven't seen in 20 years, or you saw them last year at this time. Hopefully they'll come by again.
You know, and I think it's great, too, with this festival. You know, you take a look at, like, all of the senses. And it really does touch all of the senses. And now you get that. You know, I can be staying at your booth looking at your jewelry, smelling some wonderful smells coming from the culinary area. You can, you know, you hear.
Oh, music, definitely.
And then you can just look over the corner through some of the other tents and you see people dancing. And,
oh,
I mean,
yes.
You know, it's just, I think it's a wonderful setup having everybody, you know, that close together. You do get your fill of the arts.
Oh, it is. I really loved the Natural History Museum grounds and the Hyman Center, but it was so separate.
Yeah.
It didn't feel like we were part as much part as being on the grounds now.
Yeah.
I think it's much more fun for the attendees of the festival to have us there rather than have to walk down the street.
That's right. That's right. And you have now this year. Are you doing the where you've done before the Friends of the Festival, where people are like, I think it's the Friends of Louisiana Crafts Guild. Wasn't it something in where people bought things? They had a place where they could store their purchase.
I think a couple several years ago
okay.
we did a patrons.
Oh, that's what it was. Okay,
we had a patrons program. Four or five years ago.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, we'll definitely store things for people.
We sort of
bend over backwards to make people comfortable there.
And we are going to have this year, and we've been doing this in the past, we're going to have an auction for SERF, which is the Craft Emergency Relief Fund.
Oh, yeah.
And we're going to call it SERF and TURF.
Because oh, that's great.
We're splitting the proceeds from the auction between SERF and the Park Restoration Fund.
Ah.
So... and all the artists that are coming, all the ones we can strong arm to give us something, we'll donate something that we can put up for a raffle.
So who's in charge of that organization? That's its own
freestanding? It's a national organization.
It's national. Okay.
I think it's headquartered in Maine or
It used
New
to be
Hampshire.
In Maine. It might be New Hampshire now.
Yeah. And it helped us a whole lot after Katrina. There's so many people in New Orleans that were helped by that. And I think just last year, one of our members' house burnt down.
Is that you?
No. I had some legal issues that they
helped you out with.
They helped me out with just tremendously.
Now, is that
C-E-R-F.
Oh, yeah, because it's the Craft Emergency Relief Fund.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I just want to encourage people to look that up on the Internet, on their website.
The national director of SERF came down and practically lived here for a year, after Katrina, and just did everything that you could have hoped for, you know. They provide emergency loans for people and emergency grants, you know.
They give you straight out.
Yeah.
I've forgotten if it's $2,000, if the situation warrants.
Right. Mm.
And then they'll loan you $5,000 to $10,000, something like that.
Wow.
And that's...
It's like a type of a low-interest loan program they do?
Yeah, 3%, 2%.
Oh, that's great.
One of those.
Yeah.
And they'll also solicit... tools for you because you've lost your tools and, you know, maybe somebody has an old potter's wheel or whatever you need and get you as many tools and try to get you up and going again with a new building as soon as possible.
Oh, wonderful.
They're a wonderful organization.
Yeah. So everybody out there, check that out. It's the Craft Emergency Relief Fund or SERF. So that's a nice project
This
year.
It's a great project. And like I said, we're also... going to use part of the funds we generate to put back into the park, to restore the park and the grounds.
Good deal.
So they're both good projects.
Yeah. Now, you are quite a furniture maker, Miles, and one of the main things about your furniture is you use really old cypress wood. You try to salvage and reuse.
I've torn down barns around Acadiana for about 10 or 15 years now.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I use as all of my stock for making furniture.
How did you start in furniture making? How did that get started?
Someone asked me if I could make a window valance.
Had you been doing some kind of
Well, I was a carpenter. I did carpenter work,
okay.
Built houses and did remodeling and kinds of things like that.
Okay.
But a couple here in town named John and Tony Daig had asked me to make a window covering for one of their friends, and it was like really. because they brought me this old beat-up wood with splinters everywhere, and it was like, and she's going to put this in her house like this.
Ah, that was your initial thought, yeah.
And then after we did that for them, they encouraged me to keep doing this. And so it's kind of...
So what did you learn about that, the process of working with that kind of wood? I mean, if that was your initial reaction of, oh, my God.
Well, I've never used it before. I'd never used cypress before, so I really wasn't accustomed to it. It's a real nice, soft wood. It tends to lend itself to the project you're wanting to do, so...
Yeah.
It also seems to stay alive.
Oh, definitely.
You know, like most wood, you just use it and it just sits there, but cypresses lives.
It does. And I've noticed that because I make some rocking chairs, and I've noticed that I can actually bend the pieces that go in the back without having to soak them in water or steam them. Just use some gentle pressure, and they will conform to what you're doing.
So yeah. And I know in some things I was reading that you had put together that you really like to leave some of the unique marks that you find in each
piece of wood as much as I can.
Yeah.
If I can get away with just sanding a piece of wood instead of running it through the planer, that's what I prefer to do because...
Yeah.
The old marks and stuff are something that's its history.
Yeah, that's right.
And the way I make my furniture, I try to make it look like it's old. I don't try to do like showroom brand name furniture. And so that really lends to the effect of having this old wood with real old nail holes and saw marks and things like that.
Oh, and that gives it its own unique story, that you pay attention to. You know, there was a couple of furniture makers that I had worked with years ago, and I was always intrigued by how artists look at things anyways, at their materials they use. But these two guys, they were two brothers. They saw furniture, I mean, any kind of wood they looked at, they immediately saw furniture. And there was this big, long wooden sign. And I saw the one staring. I said, what's going through your head right now? What are you looking at? He said, oh, my gosh, would that make an incredible table? You know? And that was, he didn't even see it as a sign or pay attention to the sign. He just saw it as, wow, that piece of wood would make a beautiful table,
And I have seen things like that, too.
Yeah.
And when you start seeing... I met an old gentleman at one of the festivals several years ago, and he was a furniture maker until he said he started seeing angels in the wood. And it got to the point where he was a traiteur as well.
Ah.
And so he had this connection with these things. He had to quit making furniture. He said he couldn't cut any more of it up because every time he would go to do it, he would see a face.
He would see something in it. Wow.
He would decapitate an angel.
Yeah, you don't want that happening. That's not good karma for you.
Really?
So the things you think about when you look at it are,
No, that's right. Yeah. So you've been making furniture for about 10, 12 years?
I've been doing it full-time as a job for that long, yeah.
Yeah. So how was that for you to let go of, the profession of being a carpenter, to doing renovations to this? Because that's a whole different thing.
It is, and it's not. You're still playing with wood.
Yeah.
Thank God my wife has a real job.
Yeah.
And so she has...
But so do you.
Well, I do, but it's not a real paying job all the time.
Okay,
and so by her having
the consistent income,
consistent support for us, that's allowed me to do this.
Yeah,
and so that has made the transition a lot easier.
Yeah. Now, how did you get involved with the Louisiana Crafts Guild? He got drafted in.
Someone came by my booth at one of the festivals and said, "You need to come join us."
Yeah.
And so,
now, Suzanne, how long ago? Because you've been involved with the Crafts Guild for how long ago?
We started in 1999.
In 99, yeah.
And I guess we were about 50 members at the beginning, and we're 200 about now.
Mm. And now that people have noticed, it's not just within the state of Louisiana, people that are kind of on some of the neighboring Gulf states.
Well, we have a lot of people we've lost from Louisiana, first of all. And I know two who originally lived here and have moved to Texas. So we have two of those people coming home, visiting all their friends, doing all those kind of things. And I think a lot more of these people, that some of them I don't know, and that's the case. You know,
that's
you miss
right.
home, and this is a good excuse to come home.
Yeah, come do the festival. And what was the thought back then of the Crafts Guild forming?
Well, we were looking for a way to help artists make a living at what they do. And we knew that in Mississippi they had formed a crafts guild, and it really had helped. I mean, tremendously. And I was attending shows, and I had good friends, and I could see the difference. A long time ago, let's see, guess in the 70s, they had formed something called Louisiana Crafts Council, and it stayed in business for maybe 6 years, 7 years, something like that. And because of financial problems, it came apart. And so we loved the idea, but we didn't want to pick up what they had because, you know, it wasn't financially feasible. So we needed to start a new organization, and that took us a while, writing bylaws, going to the Secretary of State, getting a nonprofit. All of those things took us about a year.
And then when you formed that, had you already had the building in mind, where the Sans Souci Gallery is?
No, that was the fun part of it. We were just getting together, and Tanya Nurbes was one of the first members as well. And her mom had been part owner in the Sans Souci as it was the bookstore. And the city had, I don't know if they had taken the property, paid them, of course, but, I mean, decided to make Sans Souci Park and had given the family money, definitely for the property and for the building, but they wanted to tear the building down. It was going to go down.
I never heard that.
It was going down. It was going down. And so she said, she talked to Downtown Development and said, what would it take to save this building? Well, they said, we need to raise funds to be able to restore the building, and to do that, we need a nonprofit. So she immediately thought of us. And she called us and said, you think you might want a building? You'll have to help us raise funds. And we said, oh, yes, this sounds wonderful. Let's see what we can do. And so we helped him raise, I think it was about $70,000 for the restoration. And
I didn't know that history, that part of the history of it.
Oh, it's really cool. And one of the funniest things that happened, and I was there, and I testify to this, the building is a single-story, single-wall construction. And they had to move the building slightly to move it towards the edge of the property. It wasn't too far, but it had to get moved. Well, in the process of being moved, the whole thing started shifting and falling and going sideways. Instead of being, you know, a square, it became a, what, octahedron? I don't remember what the name of it is. So the only answer was to drive a van up along the side of the building to hold it in place to, like, get some scaffolding and some bracing in.
It was well on the way to just falling
over. Oh, my goodness.
It was. It was scary.
So we should all be thankful that building is standing today.
Yes, we should.
Oh, Lord. Well, if people listening have never been to the Sans Souci Gallery, and that's the home of the Louisiana Crafts Guild, you really need to go check that out. It's just, I mean, what, it couldn't be a more perfect building.
Oh, it's a fun building. It's the second oldest building in downtown Lafayette. The Mouton House is the oldest, and, you know, that's saying something there. And it started as, I think, a post office, and then it was maybe a pecan picker's shed. It went through like five or six different lifetimes. And then it ended up with the Nurbes family and became the Sans Souci bookstore, which as a kid, I remember going in. It was the first Barnes & Nobles is what I call it. It had sofas. And we'd go in. I mean, my mother had, we lived in New Iberia, and so my mom would bring us. And, oh, it was so cool. We could go and sit on the floor, go through the kids' books, decide what book we wanted, you know, look at everything. And you could sit on the sofa. Tanya says that was what she did after school all the time. She'd go and sit on the sofa.
Because she grew up there. Wow. What a great place. And it's so, but, and how wonderful that it was saved.
Oh, I'm really happy.
I didn't know that whole bit about it. being torn down.
It came close.
Huh. Well, now you do beautiful jewelry.
Oh, thank you.
And that, how did that get started for you?
Let's see. I was here at UL. I graduated from here in advertising design, and there really weren't very many jobs in advertising design here. I wanted to stay here. Pat was still in school. And so I got a job teaching school. But I wanted to be part of the arts community. So I joined the Lafayette Art Association. And at one time, they had a show.
Well, were you doing art, or you just wanted to?
Well, I taught art, but I mean.
Oh, that's what you were teaching?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But I wasn't being, you know.
Were you creating?
Yeah. I was doing paintings and drawings and things like that. But I needed something that I wanted to sell.
Yeah.
You know, be part of the show.
Sure, yeah,
you know, get a booth and sell something.
Yeah.
So I said, I took a jewelry course once. That was really fun. Let's see what I can do. And so we started playing around with it and doing different things and learning different things and experimenting with different techniques. And it's a learning process.
Oh,
doing
yeah.
jewelry, it's metal. I mean, so there's 50 avenues that you can go in. You can do casting, you can do construction, you can work in 5 different metals. There is no end to learning.
Yeah.
And that's what I like about it. And I love fire. I like torches. I like, you know, just handling it.
We might want to talk to Pat about that later.
There you go.
Liking fire, liking your wife, you know.
Oh, it's a mutual thing.
You know what I love about your jewelry, though, is that it goes from, you know, you have pieces. It's all beautiful, but it goes from being jewelry that I would look at it, what a beautiful piece, to then these pieces that are just these whimsical, fun, you know, very playful pieces.
Oh, that's the fun part of doing it, yes.
And does that, and I'm always curious about how that happens. Does it depend on what's going on in your head that day, or do those kind of creations, can the different ones come out in one day from you?
Well, a lot of things come from what I love, and I love Art Nouveau, so a lot of lines and curving and dragonflies and all of the symbolism that was in Art Nouveau and the colors,
okay.
You know, that's a big part of what I do. But like all the little people, my children went
They're so fun.
Oh, I have the best time with the people. It started because my kids went to a small private school called the Children's Community School. It's no longer in business.
Now, where was that?
It was in Scott.
Okay.
And I can't remember what the name of the road was. But anyway, it was an artist, children's community school was started by artists for their children. And it was back of the old electrical, what was it?
Interesting.
Yeah, I can't remember. It was over on Cameron Street, off Cameron Street.
So, but basically, we all put our time in working with, there was a teacher, but the parents came in and helped the teachers. So, kept the cost down, and we had a great time, and we became great friends.
Yeah.
And so, I loved the teachers, and I loved the parents, and everybody was so interested in school, and when it came time to give teacher appreciation presents or Christmas presents. You wanted to make something special.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't like I'm just going to go buy, you know, a little gift basket
sure,
and bring
yeah.
it over here. So the logo was 3 stick figures. 3 little people holding hands.
Yeah.
And so the first year, I don't remember what I made. I made either pins or bracelets or something with the logo thinking, oh, this will be so cool. And then the parents started asking for them. Would you make me one? You know, all these other things. So I started making more of them. Then I thought, well, when I'm going to shows, I'll bring some of these pieces. Why not? And so people really like them. I sell a lot to teachers, you know. I sell a lot to, I do lots of dancing girls because I love the idea of music and dancing. It's just.
Well, and you see that pad in your work, too. There are the
people.
Yeah, people, but also the dancing, the women.
Yeah.
I've seen that in your work also.
We've always done a lot of dancers. We're not very good at dancing.
So it comes out.
Love music.
Yeah.
Do the two of you, you know, do you influence each other?
Oh, sure.
Your work?
Well, you know, I made jewelry for a long time, you know.
Okay.
So it just sort of evolved into what I'm doing now, the steel sculptures.
Now, do you do jewelry anymore?
Very little. Not very often. No.
You know, and I think, you know, for people, and look up their website. It's SP Juno.
P.S.
Oh, P.S. Yeah, I'm sorry. I put it's Suzanne.
Pat,
I put Suzanne first.
That's good.
It's P.S.
No, it isn't.
It's psjuno.com. I'd be surprised if there's people out there that aren't familiar with your work. But if they're not, look it up, because what you're talking about with your metalwork, I think people, Pat, then start to recognize places they've seen it around town.
Yeah.
In our different towns, not just in Lafayette, but
around a lot of different towns.
School.
I went to a gas station last summer in Mississippi, and there's these little guys riding bicycles all around on the upper part of the walls and stuff. I said, oh, Mr. Juno has been here.
And that was, that was
really the greatest thing. This weird little guy, I hope he's not listening, from Natchez, was it?
Yeah.
The Natchez, comes to me, and he's got it like a chain of convenience store gas stations.
Yeah.
You know? And we were in Jackson, and he says, you know, I've been wanting to make a folk art gas station, you know, and I'm, yeah, right, that's a great idea, you ought to do that sometimes,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
So, and I see him, you know, years, you know, every year I'd see him, I'm going to do that, you know, you're going to do some stuff for me? Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
And his family's been in the coal business in Natchez since 1800 or something like that, you know. So he sort of inherited the business. So he loves folk art. So, you know, finally one day he shows up at my house and says, "We have to start making stuff." They started the building.
Wow.
You know, so I did booths and you know, all kind of signs for the you know, the milk is here, and then did a whole bunch of wall pieces for him.
Yeah.
And he just loved it. I still see him all the time. And he, man, everybody loves it. You ought to come and sign autographs at the convenience store.
At the convenience store. There you go.
Yeah.
There's all kinds of different signings that
right.
you can do at places.
Absolutely.
Now, how did you get started moving from jewelry into the work you do now?
Well, I've never really painted before, and
yeah.
I wanted to do metalwork, and I wanted to paint.
Yeah.
So I did metalwork that I painted on.
Very simple. Do you remember one of the first pieces you did, like what kind of metal you used, or, you know, when you first started?
Well, we were talking about
I've got the first piece in my backyard.
Yeah. Oh, you do?
Oh, yeah.
What is it?
It's a bird, and it's on a big stake, and it just sticks in my backyard.
Yeah.
I think so. I think that is the first
piece. That's the first piece.
And with the metal you use, where does that – is it salvaged material?
I used to use salvage, but it's really a lot of work.
It's
and
difficult.
A lot of time.
Huh?
I do use a little bit of salvage when I can.
Yeah.
But I get it from Guidry Steel over on Jefferson Street.
Yeah. So,
4x8 sheets, you know,
so
nice
it's,
and clean.
And then what do you cut it with?
A plasma torch.
That's a plasma torch.
It's a cool little
arc welder.
Yeah, kind of. It shoots out a little flame about half an inch long, and it's like 60,000 degrees, so it blows the metal away and leaves a real fine, smooth edge that you don't have to go back over and sand or anything.
Yeah, you've got compressed air with an arc welder. So the minute that arc welder melts, turns to plasma, turns the metal to plasma at 60,000 degrees, the compressed air is just blowing it out. So pieces of metal everywhere.
Well,
I mean, this little black stuff everywhere.
So you wear the glass?
Yeah.
I saw
this machine back a long time ago. It might have been 25 years ago, you know, in Huntsville. We had a friend, and it was weird because this lady showed up at the house the other day, and she was talking about her friend that knew us, you know, 25 years ago.
Yeah.
And she worked for NASA in Huntsville, you know. And we got to be good friends with this lady. What she did was shared technology with the community. So she'd come to Lafayette, you know, and I guess mostly oil companies, she would show them the technology that NASA had developed, and you know, so they could use it in their business. So I was doing a show in Huntsville at the time, so I was there, and she shows up one day. You know, she'd always buy stuff for me and come, and she said, "I want you to come see this machine we got." You know,
wow.
So I walked in this building at NASA in Huntsville, and it's this huge machine, you know, the size of I don't know, a semi, maybe bigger than a semi.
Yeah.
And I tried it. You know, she said, try it out. So I tried it, and it didn't work very well, but I knew I had to have one, you know. So she says, yeah, we can probably build one of these for you for about $1.5 million, you know.
Well, there you go.
Well, I'll wait. I'll wait till they get cheaper, you know.
Wait till the price comes down.
Right. So when they got cheaper, I bought one, not really knowing what
I
was
going to do. No, are you being serious?
Yeah.
Wow.
No, I didn't really have any idea what I was going to do with it.
Yeah.
And you kind of do that with metalwork. I don't know if Miles does that.
But you use it.
I use it every day. I use it this morning before I left.
Yeah, wow. But we buy tools all the time.
Yeah.
That's
right.
We don't know what we're going to do with them.
Yeah.
I mean, if you got a good deal on something, you buy it.
That's right.
And sooner or later, you'll find a use for it.
Right.
But how great that that's how you found out about that, Pete, you know? Wow. So I'm curious, when you do your pieces, do you ever go into cutting the sheet of metal without knowing what you're cutting, or do you already kind of have that sketched out somewhere?
You got to kind of have an idea
you
what you're going
to
do, you know, because you have to sort of place it on the sheet, you know, that you're cutting it out of. So I draw it out on the sheet. I don't do
it. You draw it on the
sheet?
Rarely
do I do a sketch beforehand.
Yeah.
I'll draw it out on the sheet and start cutting.
Okay. All right.
You have to think sort of backwards. You have to cut things out, you know, in certain places and then...
And because you want to get the most you can out of that sheet of metal.
Yeah, that's got
kind of like when you're doing cookies, when you're using the cookie cutters and you want to make sure you get it.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Where does your inspiration come from?
Where does it come from right now?
Yeah, where does that come from for the pieces you make?
You know...
Because your pieces are fun. I mean, they're just fun.
Everyone's got sort of a different inspiration. I do a big piece now with a lot of faces on it, you know.
Yeah.
I started off doing it from the jazz festival originally. I take pictures of people.
Is that the piece that's on your website that it's like a rectangle and it's got rows of?
Yeah, that's huge. That's like 48 by 35.
Yeah,
that's it.
Huh.
Yeah, people. And then I do the Scott Mardi Gras and the Lafayette Mardi Gras. So I got one. That's the names of the pieces.
And so it's just from being at those things and seeing the masses
there. Yeah, great, iPhone now has got the terrific camera on it, you know.
Yeah, so yeah.
You can
take some pictures.
Take hundreds of pictures and decide which ones you want.
Wow. I was looking at those on there, and they're good. People need to go check out that website. It's really got some neat things on it. We're going to take a break here and listen to, this is actually from Velcor Records, had put out from 2002, the Festival of Carianza Creole, sampling of music from that festival. And we're going to listen to one of my favorites, actually, from Steve Riley and the Mamou Playboys, Bon Rev.
Oh, me too.
Cool. That's one of my favorites. Oh,
that doesn't make you want to go to a festival. Nothing will. It's a great song by Steve Riley and Mamou Playboys. Actually, I believe written by Sam Broussard, Bone Rev. And that's off the Valcor release, Festival Carianza Creole. If you're just joining us, this is The Exchange on KRVS 88.7 FM or on the web at krvs.org. Please check out the website, especially with festival coming up. It's a great place also to find out about everything going on in the area. Also check out such a great number of locally produced shows here. And also a place where you can easily give to support the station. We do have our fundraiser coming up in a couple weeks. So if you've already sent in some donations through the mail, thank you. If not, you can check that on our website. Remember, in 2 weeks we'll have the fundraiser going on. Since Festival Carianza Creole is coming up this weekend, October 12th, 13th, and 14th at Girard Park, what we're focusing on today is the wonderful Louisiana Craft Fair that is part of that festival. And my guest today, also all our members of the Louisiana Crafts Guild, we have Miles Peterson, Pat Juno, and Suzanne Juno. Now, Miles, with the festival this weekend, there's some actual hours that the artists will be out there?
Yes, we will. We'll be open for business from 10 on Saturday until 6 or 6:30.
Okay.
And from 11 till the music stops on Sunday.
On Sunday.
Yes,
okay.
Ma'am.
All right. And I think the thing that's nice about it too is that there's this great variety of art. I mean, there's everything from jewelry to pottery to metal, you know.
And we have quite a few painters, photographers this year. There's a lot of woodworkers. Just like you said, there's a real variety, and that's one thing that makes it really nice. You just, you know, you can find just about anything you want to go shop for.
Do you know, the thing that's nice, too, that I love about, you know, this festival and other ones is that when the artists are there, you have a chance to meet the artists, you know, which sometimes you don't always get to do that. You know, and I think it's a great place to meet who did that creation that you're gonna.
Well, and that does make it really special.
Oh yeah,
because you can go listen to some good music, you could eat some good food, and you can go talk to a good artist.
That's right. That's right. I always like to pick people's brains too about, you know, where'd that come from? You know, how'd you get that idea? And it's nice to have the people right there. And everybody's always been so wonderful at that festival to take time, too, to talk about the work that they're creating.
Well, I think everybody has their own little thing inside that they're proud of and excited about the things that they do.
Exactly.
And so when they get a chance to explain something to someone, makes everybody feel good.
That's right. You know, the other thing, too, I always like to remind folks, because I've helped artists at festivals, is it's a lot of work setting up those booths. People forget sometimes about, you know, I know somebody had said to a friend of mine about that it was just strictly kind of this lazy way of fun to spend a weekend. It was like, are you kidding me? You know, first of all, you got to pack all that stuff up. Then you and have to make sure it's packed really well. And then you have to set up, unpack, and unpack.
And I've had people calling me this week wanting to know where their space was going to be. So they could pack their car appropriately.
Yeah.
Depending on, you know, they have different.
There's an art to that, to packing your vehicle. I mean, you guys know that from traveling.
You'd be amazed how much people get into a car, minivan, a full-size van.
Yeah.
And if you had to do it, you know, and they gave you all those pieces and said, you get that back in there?
That's right.
That you couldn't.
That's right. And, you know, it's interesting because there's so many times, and it's not just me that's had this experience, but at the end of a festival, if you go up and you ask an artist, you want me to help you load up?
No, I appreciate
it, but no thanks.
Yes.
You know?
That's right.
And it's because they've got that system down, you know.
I have been to art shows before and sold quite a bit of stuff and not been able to put the stuff that I have left back in the van.
Yeah. You know,
because I didn't do it right.
And how did you do that?
Yeah.
To get there.
It's a art.
That's right. That's right. And now with the festival, people, just so I know that people bring the right things, there it depends on the artist in terms of it, how they can pay for things, if they accept money or credit cards. It just kind of depends
most,
on the artist.
Most all of the artists have credit card service of some type. We will have for the auctions, so they can just...
Now, what are you doing with auctions?
Well, the auction is going to be the surf and
turf
auction.
To raise the money.
Yes, and we will have credit card available for that.
Yeah. Is that going to be set up in the area where all the artists are set up?
Where the demonstrators are.
Okay.
We'll have that set up.
And who's demonstrating this year? What do you...
A young man named Michael Van Brocklin. Okay. He is a printmaker.
Ah.
He carves... linoleum tile, and he makes prints with those.
Okay.
Miss Emma Hughes is coming. Emma is a basket maker.
Okay.
Great basket.
Yeah. Where's she from?
Emma is from Sulphur.
She's from Sulphur. Okay.
Yes, and she's had shows all over the country.
Yeah.
She's quite a well-known artist.
Good person.
And shows in Ireland, too.
Shows in Ireland. She's done Walt Disney World and just a lot of different things. Who else is coming?
Calvin Ardwin
is coming, yes.
Okay.
He's an instrument maker.
Yeah.
And the Acadiana Woodturners Association are coming.
Oh, wonderful.
And they will be making things to sell.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know who else is coming to demonstrate.
We
do have in the same area, we will have a area for the kids to make a piece of art and take it with them.
Oh, fabulous.
So we will always save half our space for that.
Yeah, to do that.
Right.
Oh, wonderful. Okay.
It's a good experience for the kids.
And it gives
them a chance to interact with something that's artistic.
That's right. Use their hands to create something and leave with the product then instead of turning off the TV from the video game. I'll just get that comment in there. that's fabulous to have that for the kids. And I want to mention again, that's with Festival Acadianza Creole. Festival, like I said, takes a look at everything that serves all of your senses. There's the Bayou Food Festival, the Louisiana Craft Fair that we've been talking about. Louisiana Folk Roots does a great job with hosting a jam as well as performances and workshops throughout the weekend. Then they have the Culture Sur la Table, where they're doing food demonstrations, and there's also a dance troupe there from Nova Scotia that'll be performing at that area. And I always, when I have to speak in French, I get nervous, but La Place des Petites, they have a number of games and activities there for kids and focused on the French language. And again, the music festival, they've got three different stages this year. So take some time. KRVS will be broadcasting the festival. So if you're at work, you can catch some things. If you have a radio by you or if you're at home getting things ready, KRVS will be broadcasting live from the festival. And again, that's this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at Girard Park here in Lafayette. Pat and Suzanne, I want to go back to talking with the two of you. It's a great thing that you're there because festival is always looked at as kind of a family affair. When you look at the musicians, so much of that is passed down in families and with culinary also. But now we have the two of you showing your work there, and your daughter also is now doing artwork.
Yes, she works
with me. And Angelique. Yes. She does. And she's doing jewelry.
She's doing jewelry. She gets to design her own pieces. I mean, she started working on pieces that I designed.
Did she do that as a kid?
Somewhat. More like put earrings together or do some work just to help.
Help you out, yeah.
And she knew how to use a torch. She knew how to do things, but it wasn't... She was more of a person who liked to draw and write, and she still does.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I have some wonderful paintings at the house that she's done, and I'll put a little... She writes a novel every year.
Huh.
In November, I'm trying to remember, what is the name of the...
I don't know about
it. It's National Novel Writing Month. And there's a group in Lafayette, and they all get together, and she helps organize it. And for the month of November, you write a novel. You write so many pages every day, and you finish.
Is that through the Writers Guild?
Or
is that through a whole separate thing?
It's a whole separate thing. I know the library is helping them this year.
Yeah.
And then in the month of December, you edit your novel.
Huh.
So it's a way to get people writing again.
Yeah.
And it's wonderful. So she's a writer. She's everything. But she's gotten to do jewelry with me, and I think she really likes it.
And if we were on TV, people would be seeing the look of a proud mother.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
And definitely. Father, but really a
definitely.
Proud mother.
Yes.
Yeah. How old was she when she first got to use the torch? I'm curious.
Oh, God. I don't know. Let's see. Probably had her on my lap when I was...
four or five, something
like that. I'd just put her on my lap, and, you know, I'd hold her hand with a torch in one hand and a piece of metal in the other, and we'd play.
Yeah.
I have
a
piece hanging in my bedroom that she and I made together, I think, for a school project. It's a bird.
Now, the jewelry you make, it's done with the torch, but is there any kind of firing that you have to do with your jewelry after, like with the color and all of that?
Oh, most of the color that I use, I call it faux enamel. I've done real enameling, but what we use is what you inlay stones with. It's a kind of special epoxy that you can sand, and it's very, very hard. And we mix pastels with it. So, and it takes heat to
like
set.
Like pastel paint?
No,
mm-hmm.
pastel, like, you know, a pastel drawing.
Ah.
You know, the chalk, pastel chalk. You shave the chalk and mix a whole palette of all the colors you're going to use.
Oh, interesting.
And you sit there and basically paint it on, and then it's heated in the oven to be able to set the epoxy. It won't set without heat.
Yeah.
That's kind of become Angel's job, I think.
Well, she does a lot of it, you know. But, I mean, sometimes I do. It just depends. But she does some wonderful pieces with it. She really does. Nice color sense. Really good color sense.
Oh, wonderful. Well, that's great, then, passing that on.
Oh, yeah. She's having a ball, I think.
Fabulous.
And she's teaching art right now, too. In fact, tomorrow she'll be teaching.
Where does she teach at?
A good friend of ours, Becky Collins in New Iberia, teaches art.
Yeah.
And Angel teaches with her. In fact, Becky will be out of town, I guess, tomorrow. And so Angel will take her place.
Yeah.
And Becky used to run the original show at the...
Natural History Museum.
Natural
that's
History
how
Museum.
I met
Oh, that's how I know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I can remember
she
how I knew
She was chairman
her
of the show for
several years.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
All right. And, Pat, now, I want to go back to your work for a minute. You know, what you do with people, and then you have creatures. Are there things just, because I am curious, like when you go just through your day-to-day life, are there things that will all of a sudden just kind of catch your eye that you see as you're going through your day, and oh my gosh, wouldn't that be a
absolutely?
That's how the ideas come.
Yeah, it's sometimes you look at things, you know, and you interpret them differently from what they really are.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's how a lot of stuff happens. You know, you sort of add things to, and we were talking about the people before that are doing those big panels.
Yeah.
And, you know, you see somebody like Miles, you know, and you put a funny hat on him, you know, and maybe make his ears a little bit bigger. You know,
yeah,
I guess it'd be a really interesting sort of looking guy.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. So, I mean, so some of you are based on real people.
Oh,
you know,
absolutely.
On real people,
almost
you see
all
they
of them are.
Ah.
Yeah. Or characters you know, in books and things like that, or TV shows, you know.
Because it's great, and especially with the eyes, it's great the expression that shows through on your pieces, you know, with the materials you're using. But it's just, and especially with the eyes, it's great that the expression that comes through.
Yeah, you know, I'm pretty much a folk artist, you know. If people look at my work, they go, well, it's not like real painting, you know.
It is.
yes, it is. You know, it's sort of like a accidental thing, a lot of it, you know. And you have to know when, well, that's not right, or you have just leave it there because that's perfect.
Yeah, that's
so,
right.
So
when do you stop?
Yeah, as most folk artists are.
Yeah.
Like Picasso, you know, that's how he painted. He painted, you know, it's like things would happen and, oh, that's great because it was supposed to happen.
Exactly, yeah. You guys do how many shows, do you suppose, on the road each year?
Maybe 15.
Okay, all right.
A little more than one a month.
What's the farthest that you'll travel?
We've been going to Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Ah, that's a neat town. I used to live not too far from
really?
There. Really?
Yeah. Well, we've been going there for 30 years.
30 years.
Ah, wow.
We have good friends that live there, you know.
Yeah.
And people come visit, you know. Our old neighbor from a different place came and visited this year, and you know, he got divorced from his wife. They're in their 70s, so he came with new wife, you know. So it's all this this interaction. And Ann Arbor's a neat town.
It is. Yeah, it is a neat
town. It's one of the nice things about what we do, man. You get to go meet people everywhere and visit places.
Are there certain festivals or a place that really stand out just in terms of their uniqueness, and whether it's what kind of festival it is, or...
We've been doing a show in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, and it's weekend after next. It's the weekend after this festival. That's a folk art show.
Yeah.
Originally was a folk art show, you know. This wonderful lady from Montgomery started it, and she's passed away this last year, so festival we dedicate to her. But it's and all the old folk art people were there, you know, forever.
Yeah,
the most famous Southern folk art people, and most of those people are gone. So it's nice to go there and see the people that are left.
And like over the years, have you had a chance, like any of you, to meet people who you really you know, were in awe that
Howard Finster. I don't know.
You got the Finster Fest. So is he what they would? I think Trish was talking about it. That one. That's when he was alive. Still, they would bring. They drive him out in a car when he was old. Wasn't there some special kind of parade they would do at that one?
Oh, Howard. Yeah, Howard did Kentuck. Yeah.
Everybody. Yeah.
It was like the president was coming in. And Howard was such a neat old guy. I mean, we could talk the rest of this program about Howard.
You know?
He was a preacher and. And you know he claimed he was from another planet. You know, and
he said
he died when he was 8 years old, which is documented. He actually did die, got bit by a snake.
Wow!
And when he came back, he said he was from another planet. So you got a lot of people.
That's
like
right.
That there.
That's right. Yeah. Which I mean, that just that adds to it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
it adds to their artwork.
Yeah.
You know?
And Mose Tolliver was there, and he was a great old guy, you know.
I've seen his work.
The guy, the people across from us, you know, at, there's three of them from this little town in Seeley, Alabama. And for years, the mayor would bring them. You know, he would borrow a city truck and bring these three guys. There's two old black guys and a young guy, you know, Butch Anthony. Butch Anthony's been on American Pickers a couple of times. They go to his Alabama Museum of Wonder. And they're like right across from me. So I don't ever need to go anyplace else, and the festival would be entertained.
Yeah, that's right.
But these three guys. And,
how wonderful.
But all the old folk artists were all there.
What a great life you have led, huh? When you think of all the people. Do you travel at all with your work, Miles? Do you
go to other festivals? I haven't for a while.
Yeah. But it's something you used to do.
I used to be gone every weekend.
Yeah.
But it just got to be where it was just a little too much, and now I've kind of settled back to just a couple of shows a year
what
locally.
You're doing around. All right.
Yeah. Moving furniture, a truckload of
it's
furniture.
It's a lot of work.
Two or three times a weekend. Yes, it gets to be.
And you need a big truck.
You have to know how to pack.
That's right. You have to know how to pack. Well, you guys, I really want to thank you for coming on today. And I want to encourage everybody to get out to Festival Acadianza Creole this weekend at Girard Park here in Lafayette, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And again, you can see the work of Miles Peterson, Pat, and Suzanne Juno at the Louisiana Craft Fair. They also are having a number of people do demonstrations and bring the young kids over there, too, because they will have a place where the kids can make something that they can take with them. Louisiana Folk Roots also has their space. They'll be doing food demonstrations. They have a place at the festival, too, with activities going on for the young kids and the Bayou Food Festival. So please go out, take a part, support all the local artists. And again, you can go to Sans Souci Gallery, too, home of the Louisiana Crafts Guild. And you can check out their website. Look up psjuno.com for Pat and Suzanne, and you can see Miles' work on the Louisiana Crafts Guild website. So thanks for coming today, you guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, it's been wonderful. We're going to go out listening to a cut by Bon Fau Toujours, Lonesome Pie. Have a good festival, everybody.